Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. It's hour number 3 live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, however you may be listening or watching. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. You know, it's funny. You always got to blame the umpires or the coaches. It can never be our players aren't good enough. So it's funny. I was watching the United States men's national team, the soccer team, which I watch all their games. And everybody, Greg Berhalter is the coach. Nobody likes him, although he's 19-3-2 since he took over in games that count. And one of the reasons they don't like him is because he plays some older MLS guys with the young stars, which of course you do it to stabilize the locker room, because United States men's national team has a bunch of like 19-to-21-year-old, 22-year-old amazing players, but you can't do anything in the World Cup with kids. So he brings on some MLS veteran players to kind of stabilize the locker room, add a veteran presence, and they're doing fine. But people freak out. And Dave Roberts has been to 3 of the last 4 World Series, favored to get to another. They should beat Atlanta. And it's like, he made a big move yesterday, and nobody gives him credit for it, but they didn't start Julio Urias, the pitcher. They brought him in the 3rd. They went with a reliever for a couple innings, kind of moving, thinking, can we get through 2 innings, and then we've got our guy for the next 4 to 5. And it worked out. I mean, the Giants weren't hitting well. They hit 180 in the series. Nobody wants to talk about that with Dave Roberts. It's like, just when you rip a manager, a coach, or an umpire, before you push send on an email or on your Twitter, remember, you're a walking cliche. You never blame your players. Sometimes they have better players than you. Like, the Dodgers had more guys that could hit than the Giants. Outside of Chris Bryant and Buster Posey, nobody for the Giants could hit. I mean, they hit 180 as a team. So the Dodgers went and spent money. Mookie Betts went 4-for-4, which is, by the way, unbelievable in 2021 that anybody in a playoff game could go 4-for-4.
Yeah, it's
insane.
Ridiculous.
It's like shooting 28 of 30 in the playoff basket. I mean, it's impossible. And then Bellinger hit. And then Scherzer was on the mound. The Dodgers won because they spent a lot of money, and in key spots in this series, some of the big money guys. Now, Will Smith had a good series. He's not a big money guy. But it's like, you want to blame umpires, and you want to blame, you couldn't hit. The Dodgers hit a little more because they spent money on hitters. And I mean, it's sometimes we spent money you didn't. I mean, go look around the NFL. Tampa, super, super aggressive, both sides of the ball, signing people. Won a Super Bowl, favor to win it again.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the frustration of, obviously, Giants fans are not trying to hear that. And just baseball fans in general, you don't want to see a great series like that end that way. So I get that part of it. But you shouldn't be in a position, that's the argument, and I think that's the mentality the Giants have. You don't want to be in a position where the umpire can make the call to determine whether the series is over.
The Dodgers, the Astros, the Braves, and the Dodgers, the Braves, the Astros, Red Sox are all top 10 or 11 in payroll. They went and spent money on good players, all right? And then when the good players flourish in big spots, you win games. I mean, that's what it—by the way, Giants, you're Silicon Valley, you got a lot of money, pay for Chris Bryant. Cubs let him go. He's really good. One of only 2 guys who hit. Spend the money and pay for him. All right, let's bring on Brady Quinn. 7 years in the NFL, 36 records. Broken at Notre Dame when he was the quarterback. Big noon kickoff tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern. Also got a new radio show on Fox Sports Radio in the morning. 2 pros and a cup of Joe, Brady Quinn. You know, we were talking about the Miami Dolphins, and I had said this, I don't want to be a backseat driver. I had said during last year's draft, I would go draft a quarterback. It's a great class. This class may be good. Somebody could emerge, but it doesn't look as good. I wasn't a Spencer Rattler guy. I didn't quite buy it, but whatever. But you know, sometimes you just have a really good quarterback class. So it's funny because I watched Spencer Rattler, and I had told Joy before this, I'm like, I get the arm, but there's a mechanics, and he misses. It's just not quite right. And then I watched the backup come in, and I was like, I think the backup may be better than the starter. So this is interesting from a quarterback's perspective. If you were the dad of Spencer Rattler, or if you were Spencer Rattler, would you stick it out and show moxie, or would you transfer? What would you do?
I would stick it out for this year. I mean, there's a couple things at play. as much as we want to become enamored with Caleb Williams, it was really only a one-game performance, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And he showed up in some big spots.
Right.
For the 4th-and-1 touchdown run, the 3rd-and-19, ridiculous throw. He made some other plays, too. But Spencer Rattler has, too. We kind of forget he's completing 74% of his passes.
Right.
2 touchdowns, 1 interception ratio, which is still good. It's not what he's the standard that he's held to because he's an Oklahoma quarterback. But he hasn't developed. I think that's the biggest thing. He hasn't developed from year one to year two the way we thought he would.
Right.
And then the last 3 games, he's kind of been in a downward trend.
Sure.
So, Lincoln Riley knows his quarterbacks better than anyone else. But the reality is for Spencer is he's still a young player.
Yeah.
He started a year and a half so far. And so to throw in the towel, to say, I'm going to go ahead and transfer, you're potentially putting yourself in a spot where, once if Caleb Williams gets hurt, he runs the football a decent amount. There's always that potential. And you hate to say, like, hey, I'm banking on someone getting hurt for me to play, but that's the reality of the quarterback position.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I think right now, the hard thing for Spencer Rattler is, especially at such a young formative time of your life, like, you see yourself, you identify as a quarterback.
Right.
That's your world. And when that's not there anymore and you're benched,
it's hard.
Your world's, it's shook. And you start to then start thinking about things in an emotional way instead of calming down and then seeing the clearer picture. So whether it's Spencer Rattler or his parents, because at this age, they will be a part of that conversation, I hope they just let things play out this year, reevaluate after the season based on how things go, and then whether he wants to transfer somewhere else, stick it out where he's at, maybe there's another quarterback competition, I don't know, or maybe even leave to go to the draft. Because to your point, it's not a great draft class, at least how things look right now.
That's right.
So maybe he said, I'd rather get that started, go to the NFL, go to the next level, let them start to develop me, because he does have arm talent.
He makes all the throws.
And I think what's gotten thrown under the bus is the fact that the offensive line hasn't played quite as well. Their rushing attack was great last week. It hasn't really been consistently throughout the course of the year. And there's been some issues, too, I think, at times with some of the wide receivers. So it hasn't all been on him. But as we all know, the quarterback takes most of the blame.
By the way, to stick on that game for a second, I'm a fan of Sark. I watched them at Washington take over a zero-win team from Ty Willingham. And by the end of it, they were a bowl team, and they had really good players. I watched them at USC. He melted down personally, but he was a great recruiter there. Yeah. He left Clay Helton with a lot of pieces. And now I watch him at Texas. In all 3 stops, he's figured the offense out. Before the defense, totally understandable. Yeah. That's his side of the ball. I've always had this kind of weird theory about Miami, USC, and Texas. I'm going to throw this at you.
Okay.
This is weird. They're glamour programs. They're great cities. Miami, most college football powers are in rural places where there's a lot to do in Miami besides football. There's a lot to do in Austin, Texas. There's a lot to do at USC, Los Angeles. It is harder to get boosters focused, players focused, coaches focused, and that Texas is a glamour brand, but Oklahoma's a way better football brand. What is the ceiling? Because I have been my whole life have been told how great USC and Texas and Miami are, especially USC and Texas, and when they're great, it's brief.
Yeah.
And when they're underachieving, it lasts for years. How good of a program is Texas? What's realistic?
Well, realistic should be, especially with the talent pool they have around them, they should be able to win the Big 12. Like, there's no reason they shouldn't be able to win the Big 12. There's no reason the University of Miami shouldn't be able to recruit Broward and Dade County and be able to have enough talent there to be able to at least compete for an ACC. And no different with Southern California and USC. You know, the fact that they're in the position they're in right now, speaks to probably more of a lack of development, a lack of recruiting, and being able to get some of those guys. But in regards to Texas specifically, one, sustained success is hard to do. Usually
Saban's like miraculous.
We'll probably never see this again. Once he's done, we'll never see this again. What the New England Patriots did through the AFC East and during the time of Brady and Belichick, I don't think we'll ever see again over a 2-decade span. It's that rare. It's hard to do. Texas has not been able to find a foundation. Ever since Mac Brown left, they've been kind of starting to build and knocking it back down, starting to build and knocking it back down. I think Steve Sarkisian gives them a chance to be able to recruit the skilled players, quarterbacks in particular, because they really haven't had like a true number one NFL guy, in my opinion, probably since Vince Young. And if they can get that, if they get that best quarterback prospect out of Texas, if they get the best skilled players, the receivers, we saw Worthy really show out in the Red River Showdown. If they can get some of that talent, that starts to turn the tide there offensively. But defensively, they've just got to figure out a way of changing the narrative about this program. Because
they're soft.
And then that's unfortunately the narrative that you're referring
to. They're
soft. And I think once they get in the SEC, it's only going to look worse if you can't start stealing some of those recruits that SEC teams are taking out of the state of Texas and putting in their program. So that's the challenge. And it's gonna take a little bit. You can't build that in 1 or 2 years' time.
How about, I'm going to throw something at you. Sarah Fisher reports on media. She's very good. I think it's Washington Post. Is that it, Ryan? Washington Post? Oh, my bad. Axios. Bad. So Sarah's very good. And there was something that came out this week, and it really jumped out to me. You ready for this, Joy?
I don't know.
The top 1% of Twitch streamers. That's a new platform, right? Mm-hmm. Twitch. Right. The top 1% earn 50% of the revenue. The top 1% of podcasters. That's really exploded last 7-8 years. Earn almost all ad revenue. The top 10 Substacks, that's that you pay for writers, just 10 make $20 million. So my theory is always you can tax the rich, but get out of envy and get into earning. It doesn't matter the platform.
Right.
It doesn't matter the industry. 1% always dominant because they want it more.
Yep.
And that goes to my Nick Saban thing, is that USC says they want it, but it's a big international university. They have a great business school. West Coast, we're a little liberal out here. We care about the Sears Cup. In the end, Saban has two things going for him. All he cares about is winning, and Alabama, all they care about winning. Is
true.
That this will not be duplicated by the Miamis, the Texas, the USCs, because when you have the most willful coach ever, and then you have the most willful football program ever, then there's a few in that space, SEC teams. But like when people try to describe it, it's a perfect storm that I don't think can be duplicated. I don't think USC could ever been this good this long. They'd be too distracted. It's too West Coast. They don't care enough.
You have to have the institution, though, understand that everyone's moving in the same direction. Right? I mean, that's one of the biggest keys to all of this. And I think you see that at Alabama. And I think one of the things that Nick Saban has preached and kind of basically brought there is success. And when you bring that success, there's going to be all sorts of scholars and people from academia and you know, musicians and all types of different people who now they want to go to school at Alabama, obviously for their education, but also to have fun and be, right. and be a part of the success that they're experiencing and be able to come back and say, hey, I remember the year where we won it, you right. know, back in you know, 2016. Like they can go back and talk about those years, not that specific year, but just in general. I think that's one of the things he's gotten the University of Alabama to understand is
there's value what's good beyond
for,
it.
There is. What's good for football is good for your school as
By
well.
The way,
it's good for the student body.
I never thought Notre Dame would come back. I said this. When the world changed, when ESPN 20 years ago put 50 games in college football on, you had to go to these northern powers to get on TV. Now they put 500 games on. We put a zillion games on. Just stay close to home in the warm weather. That's where most of the players are. I said the cold weather programs that dominated in my childhood, Washington, Nebraska, Penn State, only Ohio State survived. I didn't think Notre Dame would ever come back. I think it speaks to how good Brian Kelly is, no. but he's not always likable. But I think he has a harder job than a lot of these coaches that can get a higher percentage of recruits in. I know he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. What is his brilliance, though? Because he's doing what the previous four coaches after Holtz could not do.
I think the thing that he's done extremely well is he's been able to adapt and change and do what he feels is best for his team any given year. And so take this year, for example. I mean, you're seeing three different quarterbacks play throughout the course of the season. Now, right. some of that's due to injury, but some of it's a feel for what they feel like is best for their offense. You know, Jack Cohn comes in as the more experienced player. They feel comfortable with him making the checks, making the right reads, throwing from the pocket. Tyler Buckner, a talented freshman, comes in. He's that changeup. You know, he's going to run around, scramble around. They can give him more on his plate as he continues to progress. And then every time Drew Pine's gotten a shot, he's delivered. And so they feel confident that, hey, if Jack Cohn goes down, Drew Pine can come in and run this offense too. So they've got three options. And I think the toughest thing is managing all that, which he's done extremely well. And that's not just this year. He's done that in previous years. I mean, you can go back to the time when Tommy Reese, now their offensive coordinator, played quarterback
yeah.
there. You started to call him the closer because they would just bring him in a two-minute situation and he'd drive the team down the field and get them a win. So I think it's the way he's gone about managing his team
and
year
by the way,
in, year out.
He has adapted. He's changed coordinates.
Look at Marcus Freeman, for example. You know, one of the biggest things he talked to us about this year was he knew what he needed in that next defensive coordinator. When Clark Lee left to go to Vanderbilt and yeah. take the head coaching job, He wanted to have a defense that could get him more possessions. He wanted to have a defense that was more aggressive. And that's what he got. He went and he saw one of the most talented defensive coordinators from Cincinnati and Marcus Freeman, one of the better recruiters too. And he said, this guy is that. And he brought him in, and it looked a little bit shaky early, yeah. but now you're starting to see it really pay off, and you're starting to see that, you know, the defense be more aggressive, negative plays, getting the ball back to their offense. So I just think his ability to adapt to being successful in the BCS era, went to a national championship game then.
Yeah.
He's been now to two college football playoffs. He's, you know, they're a one-loss team right now, playing a difficult
schedule.
And kind
of a rebuilding year, be honest. Yeah, it's a little bit of a rebuilding year.
Yeah, in part because of the offensive line, right? Yeah. All those moving parts up front, they've had injuries up there, but I think a coach having a feel for what's best for their team now and being able to do that and execute upon that, even with his staff too, is incredibly important. And he's obviously been able to do that as good as anyone.
I'm going to ask you two Cleveland Brown questions. You played there for a couple of years. Number one is, you were a quarterback there. They have a history of being a little hard. Like all of a sudden they were in on Baker. Now Baker loses a couple close ones and sports radio is crushing Baker. And again, when you haven't had success and then you get a glimpse of it,
right.
You can get pretty angry when it goes away. There's
right.
the negative. I mean, I've been a little bit off of Baker since day one. Now I almost feel like he's not the problem.
You got to support him, right?
Well, yeah. A little bit. I mean, like, he got a bad call. He should have beaten the Chargers. He got a terrible call. Like, this isn't the week to rip him. I hated his last drive. I thought he was brutal. But again, the point being, you've been a quarterback in Cleveland. It's a small town, really. When you're the quarterback and getting ripped, his wife came out to support him. What's it like? It's not New York where there's a zillion things going on. Everybody in the city, you're the most known guy. Here comes the criticism. You hear it. Your girlfriend hears it. How hard was it?
It can be hard because there's really nowhere to hide. Like, everyone in Cleveland's a Browns fan. You know, as great as the Cavs run and what they did when LeBron was there, it would be a bigger deal in Cleveland if the Browns won.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And so that's where, like, you have nowhere to hide. And so you have to own it. You have to step up and answer that criticism and obviously play as best as you can with the circumstances that you're dealt. You know, if you're in a big city like New York, shockingly, like, yeah, everyone's going to recognize you, but there's some places to kind of hide.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't necessarily have to always
put a ball cap on. There's a 75 steakhouses. There's two in Cleveland.
Right. And so I think that's the biggest difference is there's really nowhere to hide.
Got to be able to handle it.
You got to be able to put your blinders on. You have to be able to block out the noise. I mean, like, I'm a Baker fan. I have been since he's gotten into the league. I think he's gotten some unfair criticism in regards to, you know, what Kevin Stefanski feels like is their best attribute. That's running the football.
Sure.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with them handing off to Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, who are two of the better running backs in the league, getting yards after contact. And your strength is your offensive line. That might be the best offensive line group in the league.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
It helps their defense. Yeah. It helps everything else that's a part of it. So I've never been critical of him at all. I mean, maybe some of the stuff he said, you know, off the field, but you know, he's gotten a lot of flack, I think, for the lack of production, right? It's been great rookie year. Second year wasn't quite as good. Last year was fantastic. This year, not as good of a start so far.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hard part is when you're trying to decide if you want to sign this guy to a long-term extension.
You don't know yet.
The NFL loves consistency.
Yes.
They just want to know every single day what Colin Coward's going to bring them. And that's what they'll sign on for.
Yeah.
And so when this year so far hasn't got off to the start that they want, that's what makes it hard then to start to create that narrative of, all right, well, is he worth that big contract?
Yeah.
In my opinion, yes, he is. But I don't necessarily know that they see it that way right now.
Yeah.
And so will they let this thing drag on to a fifth year, to a franchise tag year and all that? We'll have to wait and see how this year goes.
The second Browns question is, I always defend, like when they brought Odell Beckham to Baker, I said, that's a lot. He's a young kid. Odell's a star. It had a very Dez Bryant-Dak feel to it, where like Dak go to the sideline and Dez is like, get me the ball. It's like,
yeah,
come on, you just walked into this league. Like, and Dak's numbers showed he was better throwing it to everybody. Baker is better throwing to Jarvis, less of a star than he is Odell. Is that in your career, when you were young, are there moments when you feel almost indebted to a high profile receiver or tight end? And it's not necessarily great for your game.
Yeah, I remember Rob Chudzinski, my offensive coordinator, my first 2 years in Cleveland, he said, think playmakers, not plays. And we had two tremendous playmakers in Braylon Edwards and Kellen Winslow.
Yeah.
And so there were times where the coverage didn't necessarily dictate going that way, but he wanted you to stay on him. He wanted you to give them a shot because rightfully so, they would come down with that catch. And that was one of the harder adjustments was, you know, not just going through your read and progression,
That's
but,
right.
you know, getting it to these guys. So there is that element of pressure to find ways of getting your playmakers touches. But as much as it's on your job to execute that, it's also on the play caller. Like, if he's looking somewhere else that's not going to Odell in his first or second read, that's kind of on Stefanski, too. That's on his staff to get OBJ more involved in the game plan. He's one of the more talented receivers. He probably should get more targets. He should get more opportunities.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, they've got a talented roster. Like, they've still got to spread the football around.
Well, Peoples that's isn't bad either.
No, Donovan Peoples-Jones is great. You mentioned Landry. That's my guy. I mean,
he's fantastic.
He's one of the more underappreciated, underrated wide receivers in the league.
Yeah.
They got two good tight ends.
Yeah.
And obviously, then you got your running game, which it's hard not to want to hand off to him. So, as much as it's like a Baker Mayfield problem for managing OBJ's expectations of what he wants to accomplish, it's also on the coaching staff. Like, those guys have to do a better job, too, of getting him more involved in the game plan.
Yeah, I mean, Robert Woods said, get me the ball. And Sean McVay next week came out and got Robert Woods the ball.
My first start, Kellen Winslow, 2 touchdown catches, had a big game for us. We're playing Denver on a Thursday night game. And I remember, like, talking to Braylon and saying, you know, hey, the ball's going to come to you. That wasn't in the game plan this week because that's what Denver was presenting us. The following week, we go play on Monday Night Football against Buffalo. Braylon has a bigger game, Kellen not so much. And it was based on what the defense was giving us and what they were trying to take away. And that's what's going to happen throughout the course of a season. Unfortunately for OBJ, between, you know, lack of being healthy and then not necessarily getting quite as many targets, you start to see all that.
Yeah, the symmetry's not quite there. Great seeing you. Tomorrow, big noon kickoff, 10 Eastern. Also, 2 Pros and a Cup of Joe, weekday mornings, Fox Sports Radio.
When are we coming to the restaurant? I mean, when are we coming?
No, we're going to have a big event there.
Okay. I'm holding you to this.
Okay, very big event. We only get you out in Los Angeles. You may look like you're from Los Angeles.
Klatt keeps telling me that you're going to stiff us on this invite. He said the big noon boys aren't getting the invite.
Not trust Klatt. Cannot trust him. Good seeing you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Don't miss your chance to win $100,000 of Terry Bradshaw's money on the Fox Bet Super 6 app, where fans have won over $5 million total. Scan the QR code, download the app, and pick the outcomes of 6 NFL games for your shot at the cash. It's free to play. Colin, Chargers at Ravens is one of the matchups, and 54% of America is taking the Chargers so far. So who wins and by how many points?
I like the Ravens to win and cover the spread by 5. Great run team, Chargers, as they showed you against Cleveland, struggle against the run. I also think we're falling in love with Justin Herbert. Chargers were outplayed by Cleveland. Now you're asking them to go on the road. Baltimore, who I think is a better team potentially than Cleveland, I'm going to take the Ravens here. Good games this week. I was very close to taking the Vikings at Carolina. I didn't because I didn't know Christian McCaffrey. If he's there, they're tough, but he may not play. That's not good for Carolina. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
You know, kind of an interesting game is that Dolphins-Jacksonville game.
I stayed away. I think I like Miami.
Xavien Howard is out.
Well, okay.
And Devontae Parker. It's Tua's first game back.
But he's been at practice. I don't worry. I mean, he's played before. I like Miami this weekend.
I do, too. I just think I wouldn't be shocked if this is the
their
game
offensive
that Jacksonville
line has regressed badly.
It's also on a neutral field in London.
Yeah.
So Zion Williamson had surgery this offseason to repair a broken foot that he suffered at the beginning of the summer. There was hope within the organization that he would be back for the regular season, but Pelicans GM David Griffin confirmed Zion will miss the first couple of weeks. He said yesterday that Zion is getting more imaging in 2 to 2.5 weeks, and he'll see how he is progressing. But the doctors are encouraged with how he's healing so far. He is entering his third season. He's missed 58 total games due to injury his NBA career.
Have you seen his new team picture? He's totally yoked. Like, the baby fat's gone. I mean,
yeah, he's not a baby anymore.
No, it's
he got his grown man muscles.
Well, also, he's had some injuries. You know, Shaq, as he got heavier, had more injury. That's a lot on the feet. I mean, the NBA is tough on your body anyway.
Right.
But it's almost like, and I don't know the specifics, I could be totally wrong here. It looks like he lost 20 pounds.
Well, he's just, the baby fat is gone. Like, he's tightened up.
Yeah.
I would imagine he's eating differently now that he's in the NBA and he's dealing with injuries. So you can't just eat whatever you want when you are recovering from an injury because you're not able to work out the way that you normally are.
Yeah.
So he does look different, but this is, you know, obviously disappointing that he's, you know, going to be missing the beginning of the season. This is one of the questions that we had about Zion is how, you know, durable he was going to be. Hopefully he can get on track. This is kind of a big year for Zion and the Pelicans, because we're already talking about how this is going to play out long term with them.
I don't think it's a big year for him. I think it's a big year for the team.
That's what I'm saying. If he is healthy, if he continues to not be healthy, then that conversation about whether he's going to stay or not might very well change. Because you're not going to leave that kind of money on the table if you, are not guaranteed to be healthy. But yeah, the Pelicans under a lot of pressure very quickly with Zion. So a big AFC matchup between the Chargers and the Ravens on Sunday. We were just talking about it. Both teams are 4-1 and have talented young quarterbacks. And Lamar spoke very highly of Justin Herbert heading into the game.
He's a very talented quarterback, and he's been doing his thing. Hopefully, slow down a little bit when we're playing against him. We don't want to hype him up too bad this week, man. But he's definitely been balling out of control.
This is one of the most exciting games this weekend.
It's the best early. I think it's an early window game.
It's the early window game.
There's some real. If you get to about week 6-7, there's some early window games that aren't much. This is an interesting one. Listen, the Chargers, you should be incredibly encouraged, but they got beat by Cleveland. A PI call basically got them the win, and they deserve it. I mean, they took advantage of that, but this is a big ask for a young team to go on the road and beat Baltimore. That's a tough ask.
It would be a big win for them.
Yeah.
It's this game, and then Cardinals-Browns are kind of the two, young quarterback matchups.
Cannot wait for Cleveland hosting Arizona.
I'm actually, quietly very interested in this Chiefs-Washington game.
Well,
it's a big game for the Chiefs.
It's a huge game for the Chiefs.
But, I think they'll win. But
Taylor Heinicke is, it's funny. If you just watched highlights, you'd think he's a franchise quarterback. Because he's, again, there's a little Jalen Hurts. He's a playmaker. So his good plays
look great.
He's a gamer.
Yeah.
He's like Gardner Minshew. The course, of course, it's the 13 possessions. Can he consistently get? No, but there are weeks in KC's defense, Pat. There are weeks in series that Taylor Heinicke, you're like, oh,
but it's
that?
The consistency that's the question.
Yes.
But Brady just talked about it. When you're in the NFL, you just want to know what you're going to get.
That's right.
Every week.
Can't do this.
Yeah, we got to have some kind of solid meat that we can plan around. That's kind of why Jimmy Garoppolo is in the situation that he's in now, because we know how talented he is, but we don't even know if you're going to be there next week. We don't know when you're going to be available. So you can be super talented and still not have that core of what we're looking for week to week. And that's an interesting game to me, that Chiefs and Washington game. So it's spooky season, Colin. You know how I feel about Halloween.
You love Halloween.
I've got two costumes. I have four total for the weekend.
Okay.
Two are taken care of already. Myles Garrett, also very into Halloween. TMZ released some pictures of the decorations in Myles Garrett's front yard. And this year, they feature the headstones of various quarterbacks around the league.
That's funny.
They have Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Burrow, obviously he's got to get his AFC North quarterbacks in there, Justin Herbert, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones. Garrett was asked about the decorations at practice today and said there's no real significance to it. He said, I'm kind of a troll. People in my house like to have fun. He leads the NFL in sacks with 7, 16 quarterback hits, 23 pressures. And this is really adorable. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
I love Halloween. Are you a big decorator? Is Anna a big decorator for the holidays?
She's a decorator, not for the holiday. I would say Christmas she is. We're more of a Christmas family.
My mom is, you always know exactly what season it is when you walk into my mom's home. I don't even know where she keeps all these decorations. Where do moms keep these decorations? Every time, if season change, if it's springtime, it's the flower decorations and the Easter decorations. And then you have the fall and the autumn Thanksgiving decorations. And then the second the Thanksgiving's over, the Christmas decorations are up. It's fascinating. I don't know how moms do it. Or where do you put them? I don't know. But this is fun.
Joey with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Jason McIntyre, he's been on a few heaters through the years. He's hot. His NFL picks. Tomorrow's headlines today is right around the corner.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Beyer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover matches all the cash back you're earning your credit card end of the first year. No limit. It's all automatic. Discover.com limitation applied. Discover.com/yes. All right, Jason McIntyre, Fox Sports gambling analyst. He has a podcast every day. And we do this thing called Tomorrow's Headlines Today with stunning accuracy. He predicts, as a former newspaper guy, what the headlines will be for the games over the weekend. Are you got six of them now?
I feel like the only people that say more nice things about me are my parents. You owe every time. I know Joy laughs at the intro. I kind of laugh inside a little bit too.
Newspaper guy, he kicked that career to the curb, goes into digital and podcasting. That's where it's at, baby. So tomorrow's headlines today. Let's open with this headline. Chiefs at Washington.
Yeah, I could not have been more wrong on the Chiefs last week. You were spot on with the Buffalo Bills. The bounce back spot. The headline will be Mahomes capitalizes on Washington's bad defense. Colin, this is a spot for Kansas City just like a couple weeks ago. They lose at home to the Chargers. Everybody says, Kansas City's terrible. They go to Philadelphia. What happens? They destroy Philadelphia. Well, they just lost to Buffalo. Kansas City, 2-3, they're terrible. They're going to crush Washington here. Did you see the Washington injury report?
No.
Right before I came on the stage, right side of their offensive line out this week. Okay, Terry McLaurin not practicing today. Like, I don't see where Washington can keep up with Kansas City. And I just want to point out, yes, I was wrong on the Chiefs last week. But, Colin, the Chiefs were like at the very top of the NFL for a couple years, right? The tip top. They've come back a little bit. The Chargers have elevated. The Browns have elevated. The Bills have gone way up. There's still a huge gap between Kansas City and Washington. We can agree, right?
Right.
Taylor Heineke and Washington, not good. Chiefs, big.
Tomorrow's headlines today. What's the headline going to be for Packers at the Bears?
I try to always get your guy Aaron Rodgers into the show. The headline will be Rodgers handles his bear necessities. Love Green Bay this week, Colin. Line's moving my way. It's up to 6 now. And you just look at this Bears defense. They played well lately, right? But what they had to do after the opener, remember the Rams killed them with the deep passes, Stafford down the field. The Bears beat writers are talking about how they've had to go 3 safeties on the field and take away the big play and say, we'll let you run. Well, what does Aaron Jones do? What does A.J. Dillon do? I think the Packers run all over Chicago, win this one handily. And let's be honest, LaFleur, 4-0 against the spread against the Bears. Aaron Rodgers, I believe, has won 9 of 10 against Chicago. This team just owns the Bears. I know Justin Fields, there's some excitement there, but Green Bay wins this handily.
Yeah, also young quarterbacks tend to have dips. So Justin was pretty good last week. It's not going to be like that every week. Tomorrow's headlines today. This is one of my favorite picks. I have the Ravens here. Chargers-Ravens headline.
Probably game of the week, right? Chargers. Yeah. I was there at the stadium last week. Phenomenal game with the Browns. The headline will be this just in.
Oh my.
There's a new AFC powerhouse. Listen, Justin Herbert is fun, Colin. I mean, I know you gassed him up this week and we both are. He's right there with Mahomes. It's getting close. But what he does well is handle the blitz and pressure. What do the Ravens do? Almost as much as anybody in the league, they blitz. What will the Chargers respond with? Check downs to Eckler. Keenan Allen getting open. I just matchup-wise, this is not great for the Ravens. Now, the one big advantage in your favor is special teams, which the Chargers have missed more extra points than anyone in the
That's
NFL.
Weird.
Justin Tucker, you know, the greatest kicker ever. If you look at the special teams numbers, Chargers are 29th. Ravens are 2nd. So there's a big edge there, but I have no fear with this Brandon Staley-led Chargers team. Colin, from a fun factor, they're a top 5 team in the league.
They're so much fun.
Yeah,
Arizona and the Chargers, great TV. Tomorrow's headlines today. This is going to be a great one. Cardinals at Cleveland.
Is it going to be great? Are you seeing the weather report? 20-mile-an-hour winds in Cleveland. The headline will be 6-0, not in the cards. Give me your boy Baker Mayfield and the Browns. Bad news with the Nick Chubb not
but
not
Kareem
play.
Hunt is Kareem the Hunt is good. Best number two yeah. back. He's a number one back for half the league.
I would agree. This does feature probably a 25 carry Kareem Hunt game.
Yeah,
and you might want to pick up his backup in fantasy, Kid Felton.
Yes.
I did grab him
He's
about
good.
An hour ago.
He's
he
good.
Was great last year. Remember? Yeah. And listen, Arizona's got a COVID issue with Chandler Jones, probably going to miss the game. He's their best defender. And the one thing to watch here, and we love Arizona, you and I, Kyler Murray is injured. He only carried the ball once last week.
Yeah.
And you saw the second half of last season when he was hurt. He just didn't want to run. Mm. And I talked about this on the pod this week. Arizona is a sell team if Kyler Murray's not healthy. Now, when he's healthy, they're awesome and dynamic. But I like Cleveland here. And I know people are saying, the Browns are just 3-2. Too many people like them. Just watch this team. I can see the Browns in the Super Bowl, Colin.
Well, they had... You were at the game. They had the Chargers beat.
They were up two touchdowns.
The PI call was awful.
Unbelievable.
It was arguably the worst call of the year. Now
and Stefanski, let's put some on him for the 3rd-and-9 draw with like 3 minutes left.
It's funny about that because somebody came on the show this week, Joy, I forget who it was, and they brought a good point up. If you knew you were going to use two downs, the draw's fine. Then you'd say get five, get six.
Yeah.
It's that you did the draw and you had no plans to go for it.
Do they trust Baker Mayfield?
That's the
big question.
So that's a kind of a whiff by Stefanski.
All right, I agree.
Tomorrow's headlines today. Raiders, Broncos. Now, this is interesting because I know a lot of sharps are on this game.
This is good. This is a fun one. The headline will be used car needs new mechanic. I like the Broncos here. And this is a little counterintuitive because you said the sharps like the Raiders. Historically, when you fire a coach,
that's right.
Everybody rallies
around the
team.
Guy.
But that's when you fire a coach. This was Gruden resigning. And if you listen closely to the players this week, they were kind of devastated, Colin. You had a player take a day off. Remember, they were defending Gruden over the weekend. They were like, hey, John, I've never seen a racist bone, and this guy's great. And all of a sudden, he resigns. And I just wonder offensively if they're going to be able to move the ball on this Broncos defense, which looked bad last week. And then if you watch closely, the fourth quarter, Broncos started to come back against the Steelers, and the offense woke up. It's a big game for Vic Fangio. There were some odds that he would be the first coach fired. If they lose three in a row,
he's
in some deep trouble.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the Raiders are going to...
I don't like the Raiders here. Look at their offensive line. They draft the kid Leatherwood out of Bama. They tried him at left tackle. He was a turnstile, okay? And they had to move him inside. He got destroyed by the Bears.
Raiders have not done well.
Well, there was a big takedown on the internet yesterday about all of Gruden's whiffs in the draft. He's like 3-for-20.
No.
It's bad.
Yeah, among their other issues with Gruden, he's gone. Tomorrow's headlines today. Now, I will say...
Okay.
I will say, I don't know if New England's going to win, but if the number goes to 4, I like New England here. What is the headline?
Just remember, we were early on the Cowboys this year. Look at the schedule. Look at Dak. The headline will be Dallas eats mac and cheese for dinner. I like the Cowboys. How do you not like the Cowboys here? What's not to love about an offensive juggernaut that just rolls through everybody? And defensively, Micah Parsons is playing out of his mind. Trevon Diggs lead the league in interceptions. And remember, they're going against a rookie quarterback. So this whole Dallas is feasting on turnovers. They're number 2 in turnover margin. Hello, the Patriots are way near the bottom because Mac Jones, when he's forced to throw, it's forced
turnovers.
They
don't have a great pass rush in Dallas.
Even the running game, like Damian Harris, I have him in fantasy. He's now had a couple key fumbles. Belichick hates that. Okay, he fumbled in the end zone against the Texans last week. I know people want to say Dallas is overvalued. That's possible. But we're still talking about a rookie quarterback who, if they're down 14-3, can Mac Jones keep up with Dak Prescott here?
It's good. I got an issue. Joy and I talked about this an hour ago. We have a couple minutes here. A fascinating thing is developing in the draft. So the Eagles have Miami and the Colts picks. So Philadelphia, you're the GM of the Eagles. You know them well. You used to live there. They could have 3 of the top 8 picks today. Now, you could like Jalen Hurts, but he's clearly don't sell it yet. But my question is, it's not a good quarterback class. It's not.
Suddenly not a good quarterback.
Okay, you have 3 of the top 8 picks. Would you draft a quarterback? You could draft 2 other great players and then get a guy and just say you're sitting for 2 years. So here it is. So we know the Jags won't take a quarterback. Lions, probably yes. Texans, yes. Falcons, yes. And there's a lot of no's. But You're the Eagles. Yeah. You have the fifth, the sixth, and the eighth. Would you draft a quarterback?
Let's go ahead and assume the Jets draft Derek Stingley, the great cornerback from LSU. He's not going to Philadelphia. I would package the picks, and I would go after Deshaun Watson. Now, I know that's a tough thing to discuss given his legal situation, but according to multiple NFL reporters, Jay Glazer's references, Albert Breer, Eagles are still kicking the tires on Deshaun Watson. And if Tua loses this weekend, Colin, it'll be 1-5, and the sky will be falling. Joy, I'm sure.
Boy, if they lose to Jacksonville.
And listen, the Miami Dolphins would love to have Deshaun Watson. Remember, this is a team that won, I think, 10 games last year, yeah. And the Dolphins came in with playoff expectations. They need a quarterback, Colin. I think it's basically the Eagles and Miami chasing Deshaun Watson, but we don't even know what's up with Watson. Because who's going to want, no disrespect to Spencer
Rattler,
but
people are mostly supportive of Tua and anti-Jalen Hurts. My theory, Jalen Hurts has higher upside than Tua. I think we've seen Tua.
Wow.
I think we've seen it.
Well, wait, what are you basing the Jalen Hurts upside on?
Because he can move. And all these quarterbacks that move, they move for about a year and a half as they learn the pocket. If you look at Jalen Hurts' number, complete 63%, passer rating at 90. Two times the touchdowns to interceptions, five rushing touchdowns. By the way, it's not like this is a great offensive line. Yeah. It's all beat up. His numbers are getting out. Can he win a shootout with KC? Couldn't. Yeah. Dallas? No. They've been in every – they were in that game last night.
So, two things. Number one, I think the Pro Football Focus said Miami has the worst offensive line so far this season.
They've been a mess.
But number two, didn't Jalen Hurts lose his job to Tua at Alabama?
Well,
I know it's college, but I think the upside given like progression and reads and throwing is Tua for sure over Hurts.
That's not my
word. But
world.
Tua's always injured. I bottom line, I don't like any of those guys. Colin, the stat of the week, are you ready for this?
Yes.
Zach Wilson of the Jets has more 20-plus yard pass plays this season than Patrick Mahomes. Zach Wilson, baby. The Jets have a quarterback. You can talk. Joy loves this. Hey, listen. I had to get in a Jets comment. Come on. They're on a bye week. You know, like Tua, you guys, you don't know if you have a quarterback. The Jets got one. And they're going to be good.
Gosh.
I got to talk about them, people.
Escape QuickBooks Quicksand with NetSuite by Oracle, the number one financial system. Go to NetSuite.com/herd right now. You're not winning that division for a decade because there's a kid named Josh Allen. Oh, that guy's amazing.
Bills Mafia. Gross.
They're great. Well, listen, I always want to be in a mafia. Maybe I'm in the Bills Mafia.
As long as they're good. Listen, they're good, obviously. They're great.
You can be in a mafia and not have to whack guys. It's a great mafia to be in.
You got to jump off tables in the snow.
Here we go. We'll see you next week.